The regular meeting of the Austin report. So the Housing Authority of the City of Austin. And the second meeting that we will be opening up is the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. And the third will be the Austin Historical PSC. So we now have a call to order. Roll call.
Commissioner Carey?
Present.
Commissioner Dr. Hall?
Present.
Commissioner Soto?
Present.
And Chair Rajiv, we have the survey. I'm absent to that meeting.
And Commissioner, so would you kind of read this in the pledge of allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Public communication. All right, is there anyone who has speaker for all right, and let's move on to the report of the Citywide Advisory Board. Is he in here today?
Yes.
Come on up. Good afternoon and good morning, everybody. And Leilani. Good afternoon. On Citywide Board, advisory meeting minutes for hot month on May 13, 2025. The CSD Board President calling the meeting to order at 10:32. The Dr. Castillo Perez, Citywide Board Vice President, recommends from the last Citywide Board meeting. Alex Madrid, President of Agasta, calling the Treasury Report. The balance is $3,800. Presentations, Michael Law, Vice President of Miami, recognizing Mental Health Awareness Month and how neighbors can support each other. I will be experiencing 100 plus degree weather. Reminder to hydrate and to submit work orders or property repairs online. My government president and CEO wishing a very happy Mother's Day, shared about the executive orders and to reiterate that residents, voice, and leadership are very important. Monitoring housing policies and changes very closely. Austin Pathways updates. Carmona Diego, Senior Director of Community Development, reminded that Monday, May 26th is Memorial Day and Papa offices will be closed. Bringing downtown in partnership with Austin Public Health, received overdose prevention which will be provided to residents during maintenance. Training will also be provided to residents and property staff. Donna McGrain, Youth Education and FSS Manager, the Hopper Residence Fellowship Ceremony is July 25th at UP Elementary and will have received over 40 applications. Then a child and digital inclusion coordinator conducted an outreach at Golden Oaks regarding grant campaign. 11 residents have registered during the office hours. Daniel Lee, Family Opportunity Manager, the Rosewood Home Ownership Program. Foster House is at final stage. We have identified 7 HACA families that have been pre-approved for a mortgage loan. Sandra Winston, Event Specialist, May 1st Health and Wellness Fair is scheduled on Friday, May 23rd from 10 to 1 at North Miller Auditorium. Meeting adjourns. The Speaker, President of Rosewood, made a motion to adjourn the meeting, and Alice Madrid, President of Gaston, seconded the motion. The meeting was adjourned at 11:33. Are there any questions, commissioners, for anybody? Any comments? Good job. Yes.
Still recovering from the IMOMS conference and from the Manifest conference.
We all are.
Two wonderful events.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for the support.
Thanks
for
your leadership.
On the agenda for the housing authority, would there be a submission to approve the next 4 minutes for April 3rd, 2025?
I so moved.
Second. Any discussion, questions? Okay, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, unanimously approved. All right, now we will turn our attention to the meeting of the Austin Affordable PFC, and that meeting will be chaired by Commissioner Carrington.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. The meeting has been called to order. Quorum has been established. The first item, is there any public communication?
There is none.
No public communication. Then the consent agenda consists of the minutes of the meeting held on April 3rd, 2025. Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes?
I so moved.
Hearing moves. Second. Our seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Any discussion? Thank you. Motion passes.
Mr. Carrington, we are hearing notice. Can we go to item number four, which is halfway to Santa Rita? I think that's for the third year. Okay, talk about
that. And we can move to item number four, which is a resolution declaring intent to issue bonds or financing for Santa Rita.
I'm Ann Nass. I'm the Director of Strategic Housing Initiative for the Housing Authority. With me today is Will Henderson and Jonathan Berry, our developer partners with Carlton Companies on Pathways at Santa Rita Courts. You all have... Next slide. You all have seen the plans for Santa Rita a couple of times now, and you will see them a couple more times. Today, we are here to talk about bond inducement. So, just to refresh your memory very briefly, we have 97 units currently in Santa Rita, and we see here is the current site plan. On the next slide, you have the working site plan for the new development. You may remember that on the western side, the left on the screen, that is part of a 9% application. You all gave us permission to submit that application, and we're in top scoring position for that. On the
this being the west, this building and the child care, that's in the 9% application number one.
That's right. And then the other multifamily building, the blue and yellow building, as well as the bungalows that we will maintain and store on the east side, those are part of the resolution that we're talking about today. So that's out with the Santa Rita Courts East, and the two buildings that Mr. Gerber identified are Santa Rita Courts West. So we are asking for an inducement of up to $30 million for the development of 104 units at Pathway to Santa Rita Courts East to bring the total number of units of the project to right at 200. So from 97 to 200. And I'll just run through a couple of updated rendering, really shaking out to be a beautiful project. This is the view from 2nd Street. The next is also a view from 2nd Street, but from an entrance into the courtyard. And the final is an rendering of the interior courtyard. It's really going to be a beautiful project. Similar to Chalmers, but different.
Is any of these renderings part of building B? Or is this just all of the...
They're all going to be designed in a similar look.
Okay.
Yep, they're all going to be designed in a similar look. What we don't have yet is renderings of the bungalow restoration. We don't have that done yet. This is just the new construction.
Will the bungalows be one bedrooms or?
I think they will be one and two, but we haven't finalized that yet. The architectural work on Santa Rita Courts East is still developing. So when we come back, we're happy to present it any time with updates, of course, but we will definitely come back when it's time to submit the tax credit applications, and then we'll have a fully baked renderings, unit mixes, floor plans, a much more detailed presentation. This just kicks off
the development process. Once we get to meet this lot, I don't want to get too deep into finance, but I'll let Bill answer any other questions. But this allows us to start spending money with those bonds. And the bond would cost. So by doing this today, we can start any money that we spend can go toward the immediate bond allocation. Any other questions?
I would just know that you know, the reason you're seeing this today is we have been moving very quickly on Chalmers West. I'm sorry, on Santa Rita West. But the idea, of course, is for the residents. You know, we're seeing them as two projects, and the rules and the development are such that it has to be done as two different zones. You know, very real way, it's really three different projects. It's the big multifamily building. It's really four. It's the big multifamily project on the west, the child care center on the west, the big multifamily building on the east, that looked just very similar to the one that was building, big multifamily building west, and then the bungalows. So you got four different projects, kind of like at Rosewood Court, where you got four different projects. Mm-hmm. The trick is you want to do all four of those projects together and have minimize the impact on the residents. And because we're going to be relocating, then we'll want everyone to be able to come back at the same time. So the challenge here is you're seeing it piecemeal as we work through different parts of it, but it'll all stitch together beautifully at the end. That's what it is. And the process is very grateful.
Is there a timeline for the relocation? There is. We've already started meeting with the residents. We've held several meetings to kick off the relocation process. We're actually already starting the individual family interviews to talk about all the individual family needs. We expect to start moving folks. The earliest would be this September. We are hoping to be able to use Rosewood Courts as one of the primary relocation spots for Santa Rita families, and that's about when Rosewood Courts is going to be coming online. So that's part of what's driving our timeline.
I don't want to put Lupe on the spot again, but Lupe, how, maybe come forward and how are residents dealing with the possibility of relocation? And you know, we've done a lot of relocation work. It would be the same team, it would be the CBR team, the Center Protection team. But could you share with the board any concerns that people are feeling or any anxious thoughts?
No, residents are pretty calm right now. They're just excited about the day or plan. But most of all, you know, there's no issues right now. The meetings we've had have been really, really good. And they just have, we don't call them relocation, we call them shift tests. And so that way they feel more comfortable in asking more questions and feeling like, okay, this is what's going to happen, this is what we're doing. And we sit at a round table. So that really, this last meeting really helped a lot of the residents, us residents, were very calm. I was calm because I'm excited. But no, as far as they were, no, not now. They just are looking for that and tell us the date. That's all. You know, and I think that my concern right now is just like, the packing and wind and all that, but otherwise it's not really a big issue right now. Everybody's calm, but we do have a lot of residents coming to meetings and asking, coming to the office and asking, or stopping me and asking, and I just assure them that we're good right now. We're good. We're not moving right now, but we're good. So everybody's good. I mean, it's amazing.
Well, in the chief justice, as I mentioned, we had an initial meeting and got a lot of information, and she contacted Tiffany Middleton, Kohler, now married Tiffany Kohler, and myself about one, the residents feel like we needed another meeting. And because she was hearing so many questions, so then we had a chit chat, which was just two very informal, no agenda meetings for residents to just ask questions. And those of them were extremely helpful, and I think did a lot to get people more comfortable, so I have to credit Lupe with bringing that to us and saying, we need to hear more. So I appreciate your help.
Thank you. Yeah, we've had a lot to say about Lupe's ability to be a leader, but we have not used the phrase calm and fluent. So I'm glad to see another dimension.
Thank you, thank you. But now, Created Sioux Tech a couple of months ago, so we're now we're using it for the relocation. Thank you.
Will or Ann, anything else that the board needs to know on showing this on the newsletter, which is for Sean, which is for Santa Rita, please?
I just add, we mentioned from a financing standpoint, it's two different projects. But and the 9% application is in line for an award and it's looking good, and it is on a set schedule that we have to hit no matter what. So our trick at Santa Rita East, even though we're going the 4% financing route, is to try to sync it up as much as we can. So from a resident point of view, it looks like one kind of seamless, you know, everyone moves out at the same time, demolish it, rebuild, you know, everyone goes back at the same time. So that's our job right now, is trying to make sure that Santa Rita East pairs up as well as it can. It should be pretty close, but hopefully from the residents, it'll look like it was just one big project.
And last question I might ask from behalf of the board is, as we've worked through the financing on Rosewood, so with Goodrich, there was not a gap at the end. We were able to, whatever funding we got from our tax credit award, that paid for the bulk of that project. For Chalmers, we started to see it starting to roll, go downhill, where the gap started to that was because of the economy. Mm-hmm. So in Chalmers South, there wasn't really a gap. Chalmers Little One, Chalmers East, it was a bigger gap. In Chalmers West, we saw a significant gap. And Rosewood, we've seen a very large gap. We're going to see a large gap on Santa Rita. And so, and that's just reflective that the credits are not paying, covering as much of the equity, and we're having to do things that we're going to secure funds from the city. We're looking, Jonathan Gary, who's here, has been working with the affordable housing program within the Federal Home Loan Bank system, and we're tapping into that. Hopefully, we get an active application. But we'll, at the end of the day, still have a gap, probably on the, let's say, on the total project. On West, we're looking at a gap of $4 to $5 million.
We've asked the city for $6 million.
Yeah. And then the Hockle Park would probably be $4 to $5 million on that. And then on the east side, we're looking at the city for
$10 or $12 million. We've given them warning that a pretty significant ask is coming.
Yeah.
At the word financial model we updated today, you know, we identified the overall gap, and kind of the next step is to see what is the mix of city funds, pocket funds, federal loan bank, all the different soft funding sources we're running down, and try to come up with the best compilation of those.
But in the Hockey contribution that we've committed to date, just so the board knows, is
At East, it's $10 million.
At
West,
yeah. It is. Well, we've been saving it all along. That's what it's not been. It's not surprising. We've been saving for it. That's what the AAC revenue is intended to do, and to create greater affordability and to rebuild the property. So I bet someone supposed to be surprised at that.
So are we optimistic that the city will be able to come up with the longer listing?
Sure.
So,
we've had lots of conversations with them, and I think they're very, very confident in our contribution here. We have them to thank them. And we've also talked to the new city manager about it. We've talked to other city council members here. We thought it would be a good step in front of the board.
Is this east, west, or south of Santa Rita?
Yeah,
I don't think we said.
The vote you're taking today deals with Santa Rita East.
Correct. Yes. Okay.
The tax credit award that we expect to get on at the end of July is heading down with the Texas Department of Housing papers for 9% tax credit. That's Chalmers. That's Santa Rita's West.
Okay. And then Las Vegas Heights, of course, is a standalone.
That's a Rosie Court.
Okay. But this has 4.2.
Correct.
Thank you. Yes. You said.
Yeah. So the first, the application that's pending with TECA for 9% tax credits is this building here to the west and the child care center. And in large part, we're number one in the region because we have the child care center in partnership with Main Spring Schools to develop high quality pre-K there.
I think it was very good. So we're holding about eight. It could be a little smaller than the name for campus.
So this is West, and this is the application pending with TUCA. The vote you're taking today to approve bonds for a 4% tax credit deal with bonds, and you're approving the bond inducement today, is on the B side, which is the multifamily building, and then the bungalows, which is sort of the second. So you've got two parts of this project, but obviously building the child care center and building each of these buildings, and then this work preservation of the bungalows, each is really a show complex project. So four all stitched together.
And all the restoration is taking place at just on the street, correct?
No, just on this side of the property. Oh. Yeah, these the buildings as you see them today are going to be restored to as though LBJ was walking the grounds in 1937. But the interiors will all be modern and fresh and with new appliances. And actually, we have that central layer and all that. You can actually see it. We need you to all out to Rosewood Courts because they're putting up they've got the facades, but now they've put in the new windows, and we've been able to see the framing up inside the units of what the space is going to look like for bedrooms and such. It's going to be really lovely. Yeah, we took Council Member Harper Madison's staff last week on a tour in Florida.
It does look like those buildings are facing Second Street. So people will drive by and they can see the old.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Right. That's what I was
saying. Yeah, on this our second or third balance. Yeah, we'll see.
Okay.
Probably the prettiest view will be here when you're driving up third balance. You can look inside the main court here, and this is where this is probably the prettiest and most significant part of the site.
Okay. Do we anticipate that the same equity provider will provide equity for 4% and the 9% credits, or do we know?
I don't know if we can say that for sure.
It would be ideal, but financially it'll be two separate projects. So, it may be a different investor who's interested in 9% of credits versus the east side is going to have 4% credits. It's also going to have historic tax credits. So that may be a little different investor pool. So we really like to have the same investor do the tax credits and the historic tax credits, at least the federal ones. In that phase, so that may be a little different investor pool. But we'll go out, with each financing package and look for the best partners, whether it's on the debt side or the equity side for each. So if they happen to be the same, that's great. If not, it's designed financially to be two separate deals anyway.
What's the going equity price these days?
It's very deal specific. The city has a lot to do with it. The people involved, Hockey Deals and Carlton Deals, just to say it, get a little better pricing than some deals. So we're looking, we're still, most deals are kind of in the lower 80s. We're looking mid, probably higher 80s. But it's very specific. So that's the trick, is to find that investor who really, likes us as partners, likes the location, and believes in the projects. Because these are a little different than your average, could be better tax credit deal. By design, that's really how they like to do these projects. When you drive by, you don't say, oh, that's a 9% tax credit deal. You drive by and say, that's trailing property. Chalmers is a great example of that, but market rate deals on one side of the street and Chalmers used to go on the other side of the street. They look very similar in quality and design and upkeep.
We heard a couple of weeks ago, I guess, when we took a tour of some of our existing properties, from an investor that joined us at one of the properties that we're either purchasing or we've already purchased. And there are some investors who are shying away from Austin. Are you seeing that?
It really depends on the investor and on what type of investment. Because if they're doing it, because they need to, meet their test, for community investment or the CRA, if they're full, they're full. They just don't need Austin anymore. They may still invest here, but that's going to be a lower price versus if you can find one who's got a test coming up or needs to invest here, could be a little better pricing. But it does vary from investor to investor, more so, I think, than it has in the past. Well, you'll be casting a wide net to make sure we find that perfect partner. Twice.
And we'll be talking to the board a little later today about the passage of and approval by the governor of a bill last night that
is going to probably make things more expensive than putting the affordable housing underground in Texas. Possible 21, which didn't deal specifically with housing finance, but it did deal specifically with public housing agencies, but dealt with housing finance corporations, has really roiled the housing finance system. And so a lot of folks have been trying to figure out, you know, where do you go from here? It's scared away a number of folks. But Ron, that's Ron's efforts and Suzanne's efforts and our relationships that we have with, you know, really established players that we think will be okay. But it may drive costs up. It's a challenging time in the system. But so we have a lot of ground to cover today. So I might suggest we
may
yeah,
I?
Before
may
you,
I do?
Yes.
If there's no more discussion from the board about this item, then what the board is being asked to do is to approve resolution 00127, which is an intent to issue bonds to provide financing for multifamily residential development for persons of low and moderate income, pathways at Santa Rita Court East, for staff prescribing certain terms and conditions of bonds, authorizing the filing of an application for an allocation of private activity bonds or the Texas Bond Review Board and other provisions of the executive subject. So do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second, our motion. Second, and Karen with Mary. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion passes. And this is discussion of resolution 00125, authorizing the same issue, the same with the original for the British at Tree Line Apartments in series 2025, authorizing the execution and delivery of documents and instruments necessary to carry out the financing of such multifamily residential developments and containing other provisions related to the subject.
Suzanne, it's worker friendly, but it's really nice to see Sarah Scott back.
Thank you.
Coach Rose.
It's nice to be back. Good to see all your faces. She's my girl.
From new baby to boot?
Yes, new baby.
Beautiful. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Board members, Mr. Gerber, staff and guests. Today I'm presenting a new construction tax 4% tax credit and bond property. It is located at 12201 Heatherly Drive, which is in South Boston. What you see right there on the red roofs is our property called Three Hills. And this was an acquisition with the with Journeyman Construction or Journeyman Residential, and we are going to that one is a workforce housing property. We purchased it or we went in on it right after they got COs and started leasing. And so we're going to build a tax credit property right beside it because that way we, you know, we're able to capture those families that can't quite afford to live in Three Hills. And also on our tax credit property, then when they earn out and can't stay in our tax credit properties that are over 60% AMI, then they can just move next door to Three Hills. So this is going to be an 11, this is going to be built on an 11.33 acre tract. We'll have a lot of green space on it for families. 294 family units. It will be affordable to 60% AMI and below. This is serving the Austin ISD, Blazer Elementary, Paredes Middle School, and Aikens High School. It's really ideal, this situation, or it's situated ideally because if you go north, you have a lot of retail jobs at South Park Meadows. If you go south, there is a proposed Texas Children's Hospital just probably just like right across the street. This property was brought to y'all originally in September of 2024 for a bond inducement. We did get that inducement. We are ready to get this closed with Regions debt and equity. We are using a HUD D4. Kind of to answer your question about equity providers in Austin, I know, you know, we have different equity providers that we use for the acquisition side, but on the tax credit side, we've heard that they like, in Austin, it's more favorable for them to come into Austin if you will use their debt as well. So we can package them together because that's really where they earn the money is on their debt side. And this one and the other one that I'll be presenting both have the same debt and equity providers. So if, I have not ever worked with Regions on a tax credit deal, and we're really excited. They've been really good with us. This one has studios, one bedrooms, and two sizes of two bedrooms. We have a little bit larger size for more family oriented.
I was very happy to see that this project is going to be able to serve people who are 60% AMI. Was that difficult to obtain, or was that historical, or?
Well, this is a new construction, so
there's no history.
Yeah, there's no history. However, like I said, we've got some workforce housing property. We've got a workforce housing property beside it. Okay. So this will just, you know, be an added plus. If you can't afford those rent restrictions, you can come over to Treeline and be able to rent here. And then, you know, because it's tax credit, and if you go a dollar over, you know, the 60%, you can't rent there. So then we can move them over to the workforce housing property. Also, across the street, we have our bridge at Estancia property that we partnered with NRP. And it is 97% occupied. So there is a need in this area. There's not very much.
But that one's mixed income, right?
No, that one is a tax credit, one is loan. And it's 100% at 60% area median family income.
And yeah, I've been to that.
Went to the grand opening. And so since there's such a need, we feel really good, you know, about. In 2 years, there's going to be even more need when this one is built. If y'all are to approve that.
Yeah, that one I went to, and that was beautiful. The pool, everything was just gorgeous. We're going to start here.
And it's all just a mile and a half down the road from Asher. The James, all the property.
Yeah, South Park, it's a little
good night.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah, Bridget, good night.
Yeah, actually, I believe Blakeser Elementary is real close to the Good Night Ranch subdivision.
Any more discussion or comments about the bridge and tree line?
I will approve.
Okay.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And it's resolution 00125, and it's to issue amount not to exceed $40 million in tax exempt bonds for the advancing of. Thank you. Okay, Suzanne, the next thing, number three.
The next one is Heritage Point. This one you saw several times. The most recent time was in August of 2024. This is one of the three properties that we partnered with April Housing to do ACT Rehabs. This one is a senior property. And we closed on the 4% tax credits and bonds back in, I believe, September of 2024. We've gotten under construction. As with pretty much every act we have, you do have those unexpected costs. We were very close on the test that TDHCA requires you to do. You know, you have to have at least 50% of the total cost financed by bonds. Mm-hmm. And so we were really close on that when we closed. And with the unexpected extra expenses, we are short and we need to go ahead and get a supplemental bond issuance. We're asking for $10 million, knowing that we're probably not going to go that. I think right now we're at like $6 million, but we don't want to have to come back just in case, because we're about 40% complete. And just in case we find some more unexpected expenses, we want to go ahead and just kind of pad that amount so we don't have to bother y'all again. But this one is affordable to 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 80% AMIs. And it's all one and two bedrooms. It is phenomenal. I mean, the contractor we're using is Icon, and they are so great with the tenants. They're doing such a great job. It's beautiful. And I think we're finally giving the tenants what they deserve.
Are there any relocation involved?
We are, and we do have a relocation third party that we're working with. They've done a great job. They're being relocated for anywhere from 7 to 10 days is all. So we move everything into the storage, relocate them into some hotels that we have contracts with, and then just move them back in and move everything out of their storage. One of the costs with you do see a lot of this in senior properties is bed bug infestation. So we've seen quite a bit of that, which is really good that we're doing the rehab, because we're able we've had to have a special mover, because not all movers will move things with bed bugs. And so we're able to get their belongings moved into a separate pod and then treat their belongings, so that when we move them back in, problem has been taken care of. But on this one, PNC is doing both the debt and the equity. And, that was one of the requirements for them to do equity. We were very, very lucky. We got 95 cents for our equity because it's an equity rehab. Since we are only having, we're moving about seven units at a time. So the rest of the property is staying occupied, and that's very favorable to them.
Are there supplemental bonds available for the bond reviewer?
We'll have to go into the lottery.
That's sort of like what's left over from some other videos. I mean, we're like, we're looking for, what, $10 million?
Yeah, somewhat. But then you're first in line for the 2026.
Yeah.
Through the lottery, so you start fresh.
Yeah.
When will you place that application?
The lottery application deadline is in October, and then they hold the school lottery in November. And you can guess from there when you shift the priorities where you'll fall.
And then once we do get the bond reservation, we will bring the property back to you for the resolutions to close that supplemental issues.
Any other comments, questions, thoughts from board members? If not, then do I hear a motion to approve resolution 00126?
I so move.
Second. Mary seconds. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. We're taking care of item number four.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's an old agenda.
All right, can we now move to the... So closing the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation at 12...
Austin Affordable PFC.
PFC. Thank you, Sarah. 10:40 after 12:26.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Sorry, just clarify. The all removed, and that was all seconded.
Yes.
And then started 12:46. Great. So now we go to Madam Chair, we're going to go to Austin Global Housing Corporation.
First, the meeting has been called to order. We have a quorum. There is no public communication. The item for the consent agenda is approval of the minutes of April 3rd, 2025. I so move. Any moves? Seconds. Any opposed? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Then the first action item for the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation is to approve resolution 00270. And this is facilitate all the actions necessary for the bridge at Tree Line Apartments, which we've heard a little bit about already. Anything else you want to say, Suzanne?
Just that if approved, we will be closing this July 2nd, I think it's the 2nd. So, and our bond reservation expires on the 13th. We're going to get it closed as quick as possible.
Okay. Any questions, thoughts, comments? If not, do I hear a motion that we approve resolution 270? I so move. Mary?
Second.
I have a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Then the next item is resolution 00271, and this is for the bridge at Mesa Verde. So, Ron, is that you?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. This is Bobby's coming up. It's to take actions that are necessary to facilitate the acquisition of the bridge at Mesa Verde, which consists of multifamily housing units, the ground lease from the Housing Authority of the City of Austin, cause AAHC subsidiaries limited liability corporation to own the development, cause the owner to enter into acquisition and development financing, and cause AAHC to execute any further documents necessary to accommodate the transaction. Ron?
Hey, Madam Chair, Commissioners, staff, yes. As Chair Carrington presented, this is resolution number 00271, presenting the opportunity to partner with Bill Braun on our 20th transaction together for the Mesa Verde Apartments. You all had a chance to tour this with us. This is one of the ones we were on our tour, so it's good that you got to see this. It's located at 3201 Duval Road. You can see the picture up there on your screen. This is directly across the street from the Domain. Fantastic property. As you all got to witness, it sits on 20.06 acres. It was built in 1994. It's also gone through extensive renovation by the previous owners of just approximately around $6.5 million in interior and exterior renovations and amenity renovations. It's got, as you also saw, the plenty of space to do a lot of things. It's got two pools. It's got a beautiful clubhouse. It's got a fitness center. Lots of grilling areas and gathering places for the residents over there. It also feeds into the Austin Independent School District, which is Summit Elementary. And my two favorite schools are my kids went to, Murchison Middle School and Anderson High School. So that's always a plus when I'm looking at properties, and I know those schools are very good. I think this is a great opportunity for us that's presented in the fact that as you also approved Kinsey a while back, the affordability in this area is is very, very, very low. Only second to downtown is the one more expensive in this area in rents. And I think moving forward, as we're starting to see now the markets turn, this is the first quarter of 2025 where we actually saw absorption of units outpace the supply on the ground, which is the first signs of the markets turning in a different direction. I think we are through this resolution, the preservation of these affordable units on the site are really going to be helpful to that area. We did do we're in the process of doing a preliminary lease audit, and again, we're still trying to verify these, but we feel very confident that we have 186 units or 52% of the property that falls in the areas between 50% AMI and 80% AMI. We do have some 30% units in there, but we're not convinced that the incomes match. So we're still, we're still verifying it. We're still in due diligence, but we're very confident that the property is already in compliance, which will now allow us to at least preserve those units already and not have to go out and seek new tenants, but also keep them from having to be displaced. We do really anticipate the next 9 to 12 months. We'll start seeing market increases in rents across the city, and I think this area will be impacted greatly. So we're really excited about being able to provide that affordability for you. It's 241 bedroom, one baths, and 118 two bedroom, two baths, you know, anywhere from 658 square feet to 1,222 square feet. The purchase price on this is at least $77,750,000, and we'll be using the Fannie Mae permanent loan. Our partners, as Mr. Gerber alluded to earlier, have the full confidence in us moving forward on this deal. Our lenders, Fannie Mae, has also committed to, despite the uncertainty of what we've seen in the legislature, to commit to continue to do projects with us. So we're very excited about that. We anticipate being somewhere in the 5.5 to 5.75 range on financing there, interest rate. So we're very excited about this. 10% of the units will be locked in at 60%, 40%, and 80%. And then we'll evaluate from there as we move forward. Very large two-bedroom units there. It's 96% occupied currently as of yesterday. Fortunately, we did not sustain any damage from the storm last night, and some of our other assets got hit pretty hard. So we're in pretty good shape there anyway, we're really excited about this one. I think it's a great opportunity for us to get into, again, an area that's very, very needing of affordable housing, especially in the future. So I'm happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Question or comment, Ron? Mm-hmm. On the comment, we'd be really pleased to have someone from Belmont meet us at this property. Mm-hmm. So it was really, that shows their commitment to Austin and to the Housing Authority. They had, what, three people?
Mm-hmm.
Three people?
Yes.
From New York?
New York.
So I was pleased to have an opportunity to meet them, even though I didn't met one of them before, I guess. So that's my comment. My question is, because this is such a large parcel of land, do we think at some point in the future we might build on some of that land?
It was a very, very, very a great observation, and it's something that we we're excited about when we first saw this. I'll be quite honest with you, when this property was first developed, I think it was putting apartments there in the long run were probably not the highest and best use for that site just because of its location and as opposed to the freeway. I think it was more suited for some sort of an office type complex. Fortunately, they agreed to put apartments and they turned out to be very successful. But absolutely, I think gives us several options, especially if the property becomes more obsolete, gets a little older. We have plenty of room there to do some different things and look at some different options, given that it's on 20 acres. It's also attached to a really nice walking trail greenbelt back there that just has a direct access right outside the back to Crazy Bottom and trail. So there's lots of opportunities to look toward the future for. And I think probably the value in this property, even so more than the units, is the land itself based on its location. So we're super excited about that.
Any more questions or comments for Ron?
Just that I enjoyed the tour very much.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite enlightening. And I like the fact that it had sort of an older feel to it with the trees and all the shade. So I thought it was beautiful.
Okay, if there's no more comments or questions, then can I hear a motion to approve resolution 00271, which is to take all the actions that are necessary for the culmination of the transaction of Place of Verde?
I so moved.
Hearing motion. I will second. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Thank you very much.
Helen, we're going to close it.
I'm sure they'll be very close. We'll be closing around July 10th or so. After the 4th of July.
And when are we having some kind of anniversary celebration with the partners who are getting to the 20 offering? You won't bring the 25th or?
Good question. We'll all be down here for July for TAP, so maybe we'll plan on something. We're very excited.
Chair, I just have to touch on these deals. It's interesting because, you know, with so much uncertainty in the legislature right now, you know, a lot of folks have just sort of been holding on and sort of bracing to see what's going to happen. And we've had a couple of calls where folks have said, are you guys getting these deals? How are people still moving forward with you guys and these deals? And, you know, there's two reasons. I think it's Ron Cowell, this is Ange Worker, and the way they've run,
mm-hmm.
Austin Portal Housing Corporation. You know, we have never, ever committed to a deal that this board, that's been brought to this board. Mm-hmm. We've never committed to a deal prior to getting to the board, but we said we'll do it and not come to the closing table. It's incredible the assets that we've acquired. Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Appreciate that. Takes a village.
Okay. If there is no more business for the Austin Fullerton Housing Corporation, then I will call the meeting adjourned at 1:00. Do I hear a motion?
Aye.
All those in favor? We're enjoying that joint. That too. But we're adjourned at 1:00.
That's your move to the main topic of that. We go to the action items. It's just give everybody a sense of how the day is going to play out for us. So we all say, we've invited the entire staff to have ice cream with you all at 2:30.
What's the flavor? I'm saving myself. I didn't eat my cookie.
What flavor do you want?
And then we have some choices.
I think there's vanilla, chocolate, birthday cake, there's sherbet.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay.
So the plan is to, we do need to do an executive session today to report on a couple of different items. So we will, but I think we can go through these items pretty quickly. Item number 2 is the presentation discussion and possible action regarding resolution 02900. $300,000 to buy Octagon systems for the proper license. 12
families with $100,000 each. And that's the only thing that I'm sorry. I have Carl. Easily so. Sorry.
I think that we are now ready to have a discussion. Yes,
please.
Good afternoon, Board of Commissioners, Congress Actors, and Chef. My name is Leilani Lumbiegas, and I serve as the Senior Director of Community Development. And with me is Daniel Reese, who's our Family Opportunity Homeownership Manager. So this has been a journey for the past 3 years, more or less. I'm simply been excited
to have been spearheading the homeownership program for the upcoming Rosewood Courts, now known as Prospect Heights. And so we'd like to present to you today, as Daniel will start, we'll give you a little bit of a background, the progress, and where we are, because we're at the final stretch to approve the mortgages at this time. And so through the process, we realized that there were some funding issues outside, for example, the down payment assistance for the City of Austin that are not very reliable. And because of that, we want to make sure that we secure this funding for our up to 12 families, $25,000 each, to really cross them through the finish line and get their mortgage through and be able to live their dreams of homeownership. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Daniel. And next slide, please.
Thank you, Melanie. And good afternoon, board seven guests. We can move forward to the next slide, please, Margaret. Thank you. I'm a bit of a storyteller, so I apologize if I keep you peel from your ice cream. Bear with me, I guess. I just wanted to, when it comes to the money, or the down payment assistance involved with the homeownership program, I did want to paint a picture of what our families have gone through, and the long journey that we've shared with them. If there's anything that they'll take from our presentation today, I just want y'all to think about the work resiliency, because that's what our Hocker families, have to have in order to go through the process. So, as Eleni mentioned, we began the program back in 2022. Outreach actually began March, and since then we've done a number of outreach efforts, including mailouts, emails, citywide board visitations, resident council, anything that we've kind of thought about, we've tried it out, including the effort that probably had the best feedback was a massive mailout of more than 6,000 letters to all of our Hocker families. And so as a result of all these outreach efforts, we did get more than 1,500 interest forms that we received from there, which I'll see at the bottom is just kind of a step-by-step guide of what Hocker families would go through as a result of the homeownership program. First being, we would connect to the outreach, second being the interested family would reach out to us. From there, we established communication, follow up with the presentation and additional information. Afterwards, we schedule an appointment to go over the eligibility. So a few things just to keep in mind. Eligibility requirements for the program would include income requirements, being below 80% MFI, 6-point credit score, and then debt to income that would vary depending on the front end or the back end ratio. Typically, we were looking at 35 and 43%, which I can talk a little bit more about if needed.
One question. So, interest forms received over 1,500. Are you going to tell us how many of those actually followed through and were qualified?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
Okay.
Great question. From there, we would refer, once the family met the initial requirements, we would refer over to the Habitat team and move forward with that letter of referral. Next slide. I wanted just to share a little bit of the demographics from the household, which I'll see on the presentation currently is the average income of the interested Hocker homeownership household. I would say a majority of the families, 76%, were within that $0 to $40,000 income parameter. We divided the income based off the MFI, and we came to the conclusion that, unfortunately, anything below $40,000 would result in the family not being able to afford the mortgage loan. Everything above, the family had a better chance considering the other requirements that we spoke about. So we had about 24% of the total increase for next slide. As far as the continued demographics, so one barrier that we have continued to come across is credit score. So I know it's a little small, but as far as credit scores for the family, about, I would say, 75% of the families either needed some form of assistance, either establishing a score, working on a credit score, or being in a threshold that was just at the minimum score, and we did need to work a little bit to increase that. And finally, the last special one here is just a permanent affiliation of our homeownership families. So, a majority of them are part of Section 8. Majority of families are in Section 8, around about 68%.
28% from Food Army, and then other were either current or, past families, or we did get some inquiries from the general public that didn't make their way in, but unfortunately, we're not eligible due to the criteria of this program only being available to current house families. And so then, as far as the families that did meet the initial criteria, we have referred since the government inception 49 families to Habitat. Of those families, we do kind of break down their status across the program. Six are currently pending an appointment. These came to fruition over the last couple of weeks as we are kind of towards the latter end of the program. Six are currently in credit counseling. These would be families that need specific assistance with credit. Habitat does offer in-house counseling, so they are working with them on that criteria. Five are with an action plan, so that was more towards lowering debts, and as a result, hopefully, increasing credit score. And then four are currently sent to lending, so they are currently working with lenders to finalize documentation. Two families are currently pre-qualified and just awaiting to finalize their documents with Habitat as far as onboarding. And then currently we do have seven families that have selected their lot at Prospect Heights they completed all the documents and are now awaiting finishing up their sweat equity hours. And they, as a result of the lot selection, they also took down earnest money to reserve their home. Some families that we're kind of lost connection with or they went elsewhere are the numbers that you see below that. Six were no longer interested. That was either as a result of the instability of the mortgage market or it did some feedback regarding political climate. Seven had a change in circumstance of either a large life event that were no longer able to qualify. Or there were some that were over income. Some families that were over income. Four are currently awaiting qualification.
How many were over income?
I believe we had two families that were over income.
And what was that income?
It would vary depending on household size. Off the top of my head, they were roughly like a 3 or 4 person household. And, some of the families were, anywhere between $5,000 to $10,000 over. And then lastly, so for our waiting qualification for other Habitat for Humanity developments. So they pre-qualified, but unfortunately decided to cost their taxes not for them. So they are looking for ownership elsewhere. But a little bit bummed personally for the program. I'm so happy that they're searching for their home, and we continue to help them along the way. And then Zoo have purchased a home from the program section through the organization.
Do we have any of the, we call them finalists, of this group who were originally living on the property?
They were
said that most of them were volunteer families.
Yes, ma'am. So we had a few that transitioned from BDRA to Section 8 and then over to homeownership.
So some did live on the property previously.
Yes.
Did any of those live at Little Courts?
Not that I'm aware of currently.
But most lived in the property, then they opted to take a voucher. They're living to use their voucher.
Correct.
Not that on the property.
Correct. It's, so, obviously, from here, now I'll talk a little bit more about the families as far as their composition. So, career-wise, we do have folks that are case managers, caregivers, account associates, information specialists, CSRs, and also real estate agent. A majority, as was mentioned a second ago, are either current or former FSS participants. It was great to see come across some that were graduates from the program, like 20 years ago. We weren't even able to find them on our databases because it was so long they were able to provide the forum for their graduation, which is really great. And the average income for the family is 60 to 70,000 and the average household size is 30. One thing that's not on the slide is just, going back to the whole resiliency of the family, they all share the resiliency to not only their own home, but also the home in Homestead, as well as the home on the east side, as many do have connections to the resistance.
Of these finalists, how many were single family, I mean, were single wage owner of a household, or were any that had two who were wage owners?
Great question. I would say, five out of seven are single mothers.
Okay. Mm-hmm. If I understand, we have no applicants from Rosewood who are interested in purchasing a home in Prospect Heights.
We did receive quite a few inquiries. We actually, there was a site that we started with first. But then as time went on, unfortunately, there were just circumstances.
For various reasons, but right now, the pool you have,
mm-hmm.
none of them were residents at Rosewood?
At this moment in time, no.
Is that a surprise to us?
It's not.
It's a surprise to me.
No.
Maybe disappointed is more the word rather than surprise,
mm-hmm.
because I would have certainly hoped, I know hope's not a strategy,
yeah.
but I hoped that there would have been one or more who were living in Rosewood and wanting to sort of stay in that area.
One of the major issues that we came across was, we have to cover with Habitat for Humanity. We have to be certain mortgage lenders that are very strict about this credit. The credit score, so there's a lot of hand-holding that Daniel had to do. So think of it as capturing the largest net possible with the Rosewood universe and then kind of going out that way. So for the ones that really wanted the house, did not have the income, and the ones that had the income didn't have the credit score, and if they didn't have the credit score, they didn't have the down payment. So it was really finding the qualifications were very tough to begin with. And so what we did see was that the ones that are FSS graduates who are living in Section 8 already have a vehicle, which means they probably have a job. It's a little different from PDRA because half of our residents don't even have a vehicle, right? So after finding, after meeting the qualifications, I think right now we're at 7 out of 12 right now that we have identified that are either previous HACA, previous HACA families or Section 8 residents. So it's been a tug of war because they qualified at the beginning, but when Denver pulled their credit score, they bought another car, and now they did not meet the loan. So that's why I'm not surprised about that. Those circumstances where things we changed in the middle and we got an offer for the next time we're in line. So hopefully that's helpful.
If I didn't recall correctly, when you first started outreach, for all PDRA sites that have households that were between 50%, 50 to 80% of high, I was pretty surprised to see that those numbers were. We received a spreadsheet across all 18 properties, there were only about 80 families across all 18 sites. And so then from there, as Leon mentioned, as we go about the eligibility criteria, unfortunately, there were just cases where the families were unable to meet that threshold.
Were there any families that were close enough? Let's say within $10,000 to $20,000, that would affect the eligibility. I'm trying to figure out where we could have perhaps offered some additional assistance or something out with them.
I feel like the majority of the reasons for qualification either came down to the debt to income or the credit score factors. We did have quite a few that were above the threshold, but from there, they were, I think those two requirements were the ones that inhibited the movement from there.
And there's nothing we could think of that might have been able to assist them or can assist them in the future.
That's a great question. I think when it comes to income, it's just when it comes to like employment, the lender would need to ensure that the family is able to afford the prospective mortgage loan. And unless they see it through the family's own
It's not a matter of getting a down payment, for example. Mm-hmm. It would have to be continuous employment income. That's the issue.
Yes, ma'am. In a little bit, you'll see kind of the impact that down payment assistance can make as far as the qualification. And it's pretty surprising when it comes to qualifying. The real benefit comes from the mortgage loan payment.
Majority of the residents, maybe because they were disabled or elderly, did that have any impact at all?
So typically for to qualify for the program, I'm not saying that residents couldn't qualify with disability or any source of income, but typically most families would need to be working or multiple sources of income, which at least I have to see the case.
So that had something to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct.
So I want to be, mindful of time, just because I know there are other presentations before. So if we can just go on to what this $300,000 proposal is going to provide for the time, if you want to skip through the next slide, probably go. That's a good reference.
Yeah, graph here. So the way that this would impact our families would be the price point that you'll see is what their homes go for, what they are currently for the 3 and 4 bedroom. And then the following column is what the monthly projected monthly payment would be without PPA, and then the monthly payment with PPA. So we're looking at a monthly difference of $142 with $25,000 in down payment assistance. And this next slide will provide all the information. Does anybody have a question?
And I know we want to money, but it takes a while to repair a credit score.
Right.
It's not something that's just going to happen overnight.
Yeah.
So we had several people who, or several applicants, that seemed to be the issue.
Yes.
Are they then put on, let's say that was their only issue, was they had adequate income, but their credit score was not good enough. Are they then put on some kind of a waiting list? I saw that there's some counseling that Habitat for Humanity does. So how does that perhaps get an applicant ready for home ownership?
So we continue to work with the families as far as making providing resources as far as first-time home buyers. We continue to check in with them. Regardless of, whether they go with Prosper Tax 3, of course, we have a time frame on it, but we at least hope to connect them with other organizations that do offer those opportunities. And we'll continue to do so afterwards.
Because once we sell these 12, then we're sort of done.
Well, we're proposing also, eviction prevention, how long you still need that help after they moved in. You can't just say, here are the keys, it's done. We need to continue that further down.
So I don't mean it's done and that we're not still providing assistance, but done in that we don't have another unit to sell to them.
Yep, that's
right.
Well, in terms of partnership with Habitat for Humanity, there are still options available there.
Correct. Yes, sir. Yeah, they have some that are finalizing later this year, and then some 26 coming from some.
Awesome. All right, thank you. So I would like to staff recommends for the board to vote for this possible $300,000 request for help and family assistance for help with families for foster kids.
Move. Second. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The motion of 02900 passed.
We've been tough, that's your leadership on there. I mean, for working families, a lot of care, and they can fix it.
Thank you.
So, how's it going? Yeah, but it's so difficult to work. We're going to see that it's actually happening.
Okay, let's move on to item 93. And this item is the board is being asked to approve the submission of Section 8 Management Assessment Program certification to the Department of Housing and Urban Development. There was a hearing from April 1st, 2024 to March 31st, 2025.
Laura, vote aye on that.
BP versus it happened, we'll present.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Commissioners. This is a resolution to approve the submissions. I'm sure this resolution is very familiar. All of you, this is an annual event every May, to be submitted to HUD. So this is a group effort. We have our quality control division complete indicators 1, 2, and 3. We also have help from our director in the HCD program. We submit, as you know, on an ongoing basis to that database, so a lot of the evidence of the indicators are already in that database. Final submission of this is my first time, as you know, so I'm happy to report that we again we earned all of the points, so we have 104% certification of this. It does. That's what gets us over 100% the bonus indicator. Exactly.
And before we go into this, I just wanted to congratulate you on surviving your first submission.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
All right. Any questions or comments, commissioners? Okay, I'm ready to entertain the vote for resolution number 02901. Approved, we submit the fiscal year 2024-25 Section 8 Management Assessment Program, impact certification on the U.S. Department of Policy and Urban Development. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Mary moves and seconds. All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried.
Madam Chairman, we do number 5 and we go back to number 4.
There's a rationale for this, correct?
Yes, ma'am. Number 5 will feed into number 4.
Oh, and plus, we had a fact that Lori is still sitting at the table.
Right here, that was
going
to go off the water.
Okay, very good. All right, 2 of our stars, so they are okay. All right, this is the assisted housing, item number 5, and we are being asked for to approve resolution number 02903, adopting the revisions to the housing choice voucher administrative plan. Ready for presentation?
Thank you very much. It's a minor change, it's a very important change. We added a preference to 2 waiting lists, the main Section 8 waiting list and also the mainstream waiting list. It's the same preference. It's a preference. The definition actually is to provide a preference for a HACA voucher holder who has to exit their current voucher program due to regulatory budgetary reasons. This preference is needed to ensure continuity of service, specifically regarding the emergency housing voucher program. The preference is added in anticipation of all funding for the EHP program ending in late 2026, which is earlier. That program is always temporary. It's supposed to be funded through 2030, so it's an early end of that program, but it is, we want, of course, if possible, to be able to continue to offer housing to those individuals. There's right now 202 people in our EHP program. There's also a client that was ported in last year under the EHP program, which I have let us know back and forth through conversations that that's not allowed. It's not a compliant thing. So we need to transition that person as soon as possible to another program. So both of those are motivations for this change that we are doing the action plan. We did have no comments after posting for 45 days. We also held a public hearing and we had ultimately no comments for these changes.
And we sent it out everywhere to all people. This one's a difficult one because a program that we thought would be there for another 2 years is ending early, like a choice
made by the current administration. And so this will help to protect some of those folks by allowing us to give them priority and keep them from
Exactly. Another program, for example.
So we'll move from an emergency housing voucher program onto either mainstream or onto DASH or onto the main housing voucher program, whichever one's appropriate for that.
That they qualify for. Right. So this program will move them to the top of the waiting list so that when needed, when possible, depending on the bandwidth of the other programs, we can transition them.
Okay, this impacts how many people again?
Well, there are currently 202 people on our emergency housing voucher program.
Very good. Yeah. And that was a temporary program established in, during the time of the pandemic to assist transitioning homeless into during that time. Mm-hmm. But we thought it was going to be there. We were told we were going to be there until 2028. This administration has made the choice to end it early.
Right. With no rationale?
Believing that pandemic programs need to end. And their solution here was to go and encourage public housing authorities and agencies around the country had a lot of conversations about it nationally and are inserting this very same language as a way to make sure that as few people are it's possible to lose their home. It gives them priority. You've got people who are on an existing program that expected everyone to pay and who will not be able to be transferred to another program just so that that pay for the safety of that.
Yeah, it provides a safety net. So.
So 200 and some odd. So will we transition them as soon as a voucher or another appropriate program comes up?
Comes available, yes. So as you know, we're in shortfall right now, so we can't actually transition them to the main voucher waiting list right now. But there is some room in mainstream. So we're having a lot of conversations, you know, community with ECHO and also Interval Care. You know, we're not the only AHV program in town. So just kind of have these conversations and make sure that we are prepared to transition them to the best. I mean, a lot of these are PSH, you know, the permanent supportive housing. So we want to make sure that their services also continue and that they're placed in the appropriate program.
Where they're appropriate, yes.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
And there's no question or concern about any of the forms you get in any of this.
There is. This will help ensure that fewer fall through the gap mark. That's why we're working. Yeah, that we're taking as soon as we found this out, we decided not to wait and we just decided to go ahead and get this language in so we can start helping people with now about 16 months.
Right now if they stay, I mean, there is a natural attrition, of course, but with the 202 and the funding that we have, it goes through September of 2026.
Yeah.
Right. And that money, of course, the more people that transition into other programs or naturally leave the programs, that money will last longer. But that's to be determined, of course.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? I'll entertain a motion to approve resolution number 02903.
So moved.
Second. And the move is seconded. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Okay, and this is the quality control resolution, item number 4, and Crawford is going to do the presentation.
Good afternoon. This is, you see this every year, whenever something's done with the administrative plan, if it needs public comment, if it meets a certain level, then it has to be changed in the PHA annual and five-year plan. And we just modified those to incorporate what Laura just explained about the emergency housing benefits. So it changes eligibility, who's eligible and under a wait list. So once that comes into play, we have to put that out in the annual plan. And we just zhuzh up a little bit of the five-year mission goals and objectives just to try to tighten those up. We've had multiple meetings on our strategic plan, which is, informs the five-year plan, and it's really come along quite a bit, and that's reflected in the five-year plan.
And who's involved in this movement?
With the strategic plan?
Right.
All of the directors, vice presidents, you've got managers, whomever might be involved in the actual objective, and then they may own the goal underneath that objective. So they all come to these meetings. We have CDR Melanie Campbell who comes in, and she's been really great about holding us accountable to what. We're accountable anyway, but you know the time frame. Every quarter she's here, and so everybody's looking into how can I make sure that I have something important and exciting to report. So I think it's been a really great process.
Commissioners, any questions or comments?
I know at one time, and popping to mind, there was some language that we took out of our strategic plan.
Yeah.
That we related to the somebody want to comment on that?
Sure.
Or not?
Sure. The clear directives by the President of the United States regarding diversity, equity, and inclusion programs within federal programs. And on the advice of council at the national level, Orlando, Florida, and our various associations, we felt that it was important to not to comply with our understanding of those and to remove language that could be misinterpreted or misconstrued. We previously had an item, I think 6 or 7, that was explicit, item 6 at least, explicitly diversity, equity, and inclusion oriented. However, just because it doesn't say it in an item 6 in the plan doesn't mean that diversity, equity, and inclusion activities are important here at HACA. And I know there's a lot of eyes on the idea of DEI. We've been just kind of calling it DRT, do the right thing. And we think we're better off with an inclusive, diverse workforce.
Would you repeat that one, please?
Sure. We call it DEI equals DRT, do the right thing. We think that we're better off when HACA is inclusive and the workforce and programs and those clients that are diverse in our city and state. And so we have tweaked language throughout our strategic plan to make sure that residents and clients and staff can all be engaged and talk about issues and common ground to get a low understanding and to involve programs that are inclusive to all. We've taken out language that might be construed by federal regulators as advancing some other agenda, which it's not. We believe, and we hope.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if this is the follow-up question or not, but it just occurs to me that we do collect data. Are we collecting data in the form that if one were asked the question whether or not we are following issues or being guided by diversity and inclusion, will we have the data in a format that would support that type of inclusion?
We do within our both within some of our strategic the goals that we've laid out, as well as some of the information that we retained within our given resources functions, as well as within programs. We, you know, we know who we serve. We know lots about who we serve. We know what programs are impacting. We do that analysis, and that part hasn't changed.
Right. Yeah. So we would have that information when we whether we categorize it with the title or not.
Yeah, correct. And we weren't categorizing the title really from a data collection standpoint as much as we were doing it from we thought it was
maybe not a policy issue.
We felt that that organizationally it should be a safe place for people that color, ethnicity, race, orientation, and gender identity to work and to receive services and benefits we didn't need it before, but it became important during last several years to be explicit about that. Obviously, some policymakers are taking exception to that now and don't want to see that explicitly identified. But I don't believe it's changed any of our values, and so we remain very committed to it, and we continue to talk about it just in the context of our existing strategies and goals, and make sure that we are inclusive of all that are here.
Yeah, because I would like to see, I guess, if not annually, at least once every 3 years, some kind of report that really focuses on the various diverse populations that we serve and how we serve them. And I don't care what we call it, we just do.
We absolutely do that. And I think we do provide information and reports in the back, but we'll I'll ask Sylvia to maybe think about how we can compile that for you, and maybe in one of the next couple of meetings we'll do a full report. Because we absolutely have it.
We already collect the demographics of our residents, so we can pull those reports rather easily.
Yeah.
And they show in the annual report that we publish every year. We talk about income, we talk about race, ethnicity, things like that.
And we're also submitting this information to the feds
I guess transmitted through the voucher submission request that we make on a monthly basis, and so it has that information already collected, and really HUD has access to it anyway.
Well, it's also part of our annual fund, isn't it?
On the voucher program side, yes, it does include some basic demographics.
Generally, our system, both in PDRA and in our voucher system, we're reporting information in a shared database that they can see and log in data for themselves. And they have teams of people, you may not anymore, but they used to have teams of people who did analysis and research. And we asked lots and lots of questions. And it's a very ongoing, just an example, the voucher program. Laura is talking to her colleagues in the San Antonio field office and other parts of HUD multiple times a week. So it's an ongoing, robust relationship. So they really are making all the people. Although many of the faces have changed and how that information is supported, which is a responsibility to keep track of it. But that doesn't get to your earlier question, which is going to point out to you all on that meeting. We'll try to let's think about that and plan for either July meeting or August meeting to share with the board what that like is.
I appreciate that. Board members, I'm assuming we'll also want to see this information.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is the San Antonio field office still open?
Scale down, but it is.
All right. Any other questions or comments about this item? Okay. So I will entertain a motion to approve or adopt the submit revisions of the 2025 patient plan and the 2025 plan to HUD. And this is resolution 02902.
And I have a motion from the firm, the second from there.
Yes.
All the I'm going to do it again. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Yes, motion.
Great job, Lord.
We have continued our agenda items, and so we need to adjourn to the second session.
Well, we still have some questions.
So we have item number six and item number seven.
We're seeing it already.
Okay, so item number six, the board is being asked to approve resolution number 02904. And this is to approve the resolution of the Austin Affordable PFC, providing for the issuance of the small team family housing revenue fund bonds at Bridge at Tree Line Apartments. And we've had a very thorough discussion of this item already. Is there, are there any additional questions or comments? Okay, then I would entertain the motion to approve item number 02904. We will go in alphabetical order. Commissioner moves and Harrington seconds. Okay. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And item number seven, we are being asked to approve resolution number 02906 to take the following actions with regard to the bridge of Mesa Verde. Inquire the site of the development, lease the development site to the owner of the development, and such other actions necessary convenient to carry out this resolution. Any comments or questions? Yeah, I would entertain a motion to approve resolution number 02906.
I'm not.
Commissioner Perry can move, and Commissioner Office seconds. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. And that seems to be all of our action items for
what? Well, we can have a second session.
I was thinking there, yeah. Step ahead of
me. I'm sorry.
Okay, so now that we've completed our action items, we need to move to the second session. And I expect that we will take the number code.
Probably for May, which I'm going to see the coordinator will go to.
And we have to come back.
We'll come back.
And close it, yeah.
By the way, I got 40 minutes.
Okay. All right, so we will see you all later. Thank you very much for your attention and your presentation.
Just something on the back. I don't know.
But, oh, yeah.